All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri
Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Uti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nibasasa Sumirani Paskachar Hesitana Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Tarapadapamakam Sri Guru Vaishnavas Chas Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahana Raghavatam Vitam Sam Sahanam Sadvaitam Sadvaitam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Sahanam Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam. Nice to see you again. And nice to see all of you again. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 24, Worshipping Govardhanto. Text 2 through 4, and text 4 is on the board. So I'll go through 2 and 3. Tad abhignobhi bhagavan sarvatma sarvadarshanaha. Prashrayat vannato prichchad vrida nanda purogaman. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Being the omniscient, being the omniscient supersoul, the Supreme Lord Krishna already understood the situation, yet he still humbly inquired from the elders, headed by his father, Nanda Maharaj. Purport. Lord Krishna was eager to enact his pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill and defeating the false pride of Indra, and thus he cleverly inquired from his father about the imminent sacrifice. Katyatam me pitakoyam samramo va upakha kim palam kasya vodesha kena va sadyate maka. Lord Krishna said, "My dear father, kindly explain to me what this great endeavor of yours is all about. What is it meant to accomplish? If this is a ritual sacrifice, then for whose satisfaction is it intended? And by what means is it going to be executed?" Text 4. Etad bruhi mahan kamo.
Etad bruhi mahan kamo.
Mayam shushru save pita.
Mayam shushru save pita.
Nahi gopyami sadunam.
Nahi gopyami sadunam.
Krityam sarvatmanam miha.
Krityam sarvatmanam miha.
Asya sva paradristinam.
Asya sva paradristinam.
Amitro dasta vishvivam vishvivisam.
Amitro dasta vishvivam.
Please turn.
Etat bruhi maham kamo.
Etat bruhi maham kamo.
Mayam surishave pita.
Mayam surishave pita.
Nahi gopyam hi sadunam.
Nahi gopyam hi sadunam.
Krityam savatamanam iha.
Krityam savatamanam iha.
Asti ashva paradrishtinam.
Asti ashva paradrishtinam.
Amrito tasta vidvisam.
Amrito tasta vidvisam.
Tad bruhi mahan kamo.
Tad bruhi mahan kamo.
Mahyam sushri sabe pitaha.
Mahyam sushri sabe pitaha.
Nahi gopyam hi sadhunam.
Nahi gopyam hi sadhunam.
Krityam sarvatmanamiha.
Krityam sarvatmanamiha.
Asya sva paradrishtinam.
Asya sva paradrishtinam.
Amitro dasta vidvisam.
Amitro dasta vidvisam.
tadbruhi mahan kamo.
Tadbruhi mahan kamo.
Makyam shushru savekita.
Makyam shushru savekita.
Nahi gopyami samuna.
Nahi gopyami samuna.
Kricham sarvatmanamiha.
Kricham sarvatmanamiha.
Asti asva paradrishtinam.
Asti asva paradrishtinam.
Dasta vidvisham.
Amitra dasta vidvisham.
Ladies.
Eta prihi mahakamo.
Eta prihi mahakamo.
Mayan shushu savekita.
Mayan shushu savekita.
Nami gopyam isaduna.
Nami gopyam isaduna.
Kircham sarvatmaiha.
Kircham sarvatmanamiha.
By the way, in Sanskrit, if there's an I, which is it, and there's a or a, ya, it becomes ya. So you don't say asti asva, you say ast yasva. It becomes ya, even though it's still two different words. Etat.
Eta.
This.
Yes.
Bruhi.
Please speak.
Mahan. Great. Kama.
Desire.
Mayam.
To me.
Shushru Shave. Who am ready to hear faithfully. Pitaha.
O
Father.
Na.
Not. He.
Indeed.
Gopyam. To be kept secret. He. Certainly. Sadhunam.
Of saintly persons.
Krityam. The activities. Sarva Atmanam. Who see everyone as equal to themselves. Iha. In this world. Asti. There is. Ashvaparadristinam. Who do not distinguish between what is their own and what is another's. Amitra udasta vidvishan. Who do not distinguish between friends, neutral parties, and enemies. Translation of purport. Please tell me about it, O Father. I have a great desire to know, and I am ready to hear in good faith. Certainly, no secrets are to be kept by saintly persons who see all others as equal to themselves, who have no conception of mine or another's, and who do not consider who is a friend, who is an enemy, and who is neutral. Purport. Lord Krishna's father might have thought that his son was a mere child, and thus could not properly question the validity of a Vedic sacrifice. But the Lord's clever statement here would certainly have convinced Nanda that Sri Krishna was making a serious, not a whimsical, inquiry, and that a serious answer should thus be given. So, Krishna has a problem that we often have, that we see somebody who's an authority, who's superior to us, doing something that we're convinced is wrong. We ever have that problem? Anybody ever have that problem?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Krishna's also in this situation. And let's see what he does. Alright, so first of all, Krishna is certain that he knows what's right and what's wrong. Going back to text 2. Tad abhigno.
Abhigno, not Jnana. He has full knowledge. So he actually knows what's right and what's wrong. He's not just guessing. Sarva Atma, he's the Atma of the Atma. He's the self of the self. I mean, this is perhaps a little hard to grasp, but if we can think of the universe as one body, and in the universal body, there's a soul, and that soul is Krishna. And we're all like the little cells in a body. Just like in our body, we're the soul, we're the super self of all the little cells in our body. So Krishna is the super self of the universal body. He's the self of the self. So being the self of the self, the super self, as it says here, sarva atma, of all selves, he is the self. He certainly knows already what Nanda Maharaj's intentions are. He knows the answer to all of his questions that he's asking, and he knows what should be done. Sarva darshanaha. So sarva means all. Darshana means to?
See.
To see. He sees everything. So seeing everything, knowing everything, being the self of all selves, and seeing everything, he knows what is right and what's wrong. In other words, he's sure. He's completely sure. I remember one time I was talking to one of my children, and I said, I forget what I was talking about, something. And my son said, Mata, are you sure? I said, oh yeah, I'm sure. And then there was a long pause, and he said, are you 100% sure? And then I had a long pause, and I said, is there something I don't know? So Krishna's 100% sure. He knows. Why? Because, not because he's arrogant. Like in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, that is my opinion. But it's not because Krishna's proud, it's because he actually sees everything. And he actually knows everything. And he's the self of the self. Okay, then what does he do? Prashraya Amvantaha. He bows down humbly. So he takes a humble position, not just in his speech, but even in his body. You know, the word vandanam means both offering prayers and offering obeisances. Taking the body and putting it down in a lower position. So we might think, well, what does it matter? But it does matter. What you do with your body affects your mind. What you do with your mind affects your body. So Krishna is literally, physically going down in a humble position and in a humble mood. Just like Kamsa was very respectful to Narada, but not because he actually respected Narada. He was being respectful to Narada because he wanted something. He wanted some information from Narada in order to secure his own position. So that kind of respect, it's not... You ever have people who show you respect like that? They show you respect because they want something from you. But Krishna is showing genuine respect, which is very interesting because, on the one hand, who's really the father of everyone? Aham bija pradapita, Krishna. Aham sarvasya prabhupamata sarvam prabhupate. Krishna is the source of everything. Who is there that he should or could or has to respect? No one. And yet we have vridan from the elders. So how is it that Krishna has an elder? Ajyam purana purusham. He is the eldest. He is the grandfather and the great-grandfather and the great-grandfather. There's no one elder to Krishna. But Krishna has this mood. He's taking, this is very important. Even though he's actually the elder, in one sense, he has this mood that Nanda Maharaj is his father. Of course, we could ask, what is more true? That Nanda Maharaj is Krishna's father, or that Krishna is Nanda Maharaj's father? Which is more true? Can't really answer that, can you? So we can say on another level that Nanda Maharaj is actually Krishna's father. That is actually what's true. And that's more true than that Krishna is Nanda Maharaj's father.
Why? Because that's what Krishna likes, and whatever Krishna likes is truth. Param Satvam Dhimahi, he's the absolute truth. So on one level, Nanda Maharaj is Krishna's out there. Although Nanda Maharaj is not Sarvadarshanaha and Tab Avigno and Sarvatma. You cannot say Nanda Maharaj sees everything, knows everything, and is the self of the self. Yet on a level of rasa, he is Krishna's elder. Alright, so Krishna is having the mood that you're my elder. He's having the mood of humility. He's physically showing humility. And he's sure that he knows what's right. He doesn't have any doubt about that. Okay, so now what does he ask? Okay? He says, Kim Palam. Palam means a what?
Fruit.
Fruit. What's the result? What are you doing this for? This is a very important question. What are you doing this for? What do you hope to achieve? You know, sometimes we don't know what we're doing something for. We're just doing it because that's what everybody does. Or that's what somebody told us to do. And we don't really know what our goal is, what our purpose is. It's like when I was a teenager and petrol was only 27 cents a gallon, we sometimes would just ride around in the car without going anywhere. I don't think people do that anymore. Very, very, very rich people. But that was one thing that, you know, my friends and I did. Oh, let's just go for a ride. You know, you put a dollar of petrol in your car and you could ride for a long time. And you weren't going anywhere. You didn't have any goal. At least one time when Prabhupada saw people jogging, he said, where are they going? What do you hope to achieve? By the way, most people don't really ask themselves this question. What is the goal of my activities? What is the goal of my life? What am I doing it for? So, Kim Palam, he's asking. Then he's asking, Kasya, who's going to get this fruit? For whom are you doing this? Who's going to benefit? Then, Kena Sadyate, what's your process? How do you hope to get this result? Does anybody see what we're having here? What is the goal? Who are you doing it for? And what's your process? What's Krishna asking? Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. Yes. The sacrifice, it's in relationship to whom? How do you do it? And what's your purpose? Now you'll also notice that Krishna is making his point through asking questions. He's not going to Nanda Maharaj, at least initially, and saying, you're nonsense. I know everything. What do you know? You're apparently my elder, but by the way, I'm God, and I see everything, and I don't like what you're doing. Stop it now. So that's not how he's approaching it. He's approaching it, I'm your subordinate, I offer you my obeisances. He was just a little boy, 7 years old. Just a little boy. If you can think of some seven-year-old, you know. Not very small. And they have a little cute voice, you know. What's the fruit? Who are you doing it for? How are you doing it? You know, this real sweet, charming little voice asking. So then what does Nanda Maharaj do for these questions? He's just silent. He doesn't reply. So sometimes this also happens. We think an authority is doing something wrong. We make an appeal humbly, respectfully, and we are ignored. Do you ever get ignored by your authorities when you question them? Does that ever happen? Yeah. Sometimes you get ignored for a long time. Yes. Actually, that's the one of the explanations Rupa Goswami gives of being honorable. in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that Krishna is all honorable. And the example he gives is that he can make very big people wait. Right? The Brahma and Shiva and Varuna and Indra, they all come to see Krishna and Dwarka, they just have to wait. And in fact, Varuna is told, go away, Krishna has no time to see you, come back another day. Right? And Indra is told, will you please pray more quietly? You're disturbing everybody. So that's honorable, Krishna. And does Krishna sometimes make us wait? Yes?
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. Sometimes you're saying, Krishna, Krishna, what do I do? And the answer is, wait. One devotee said to me, it's just like you keep your spoons and forks in some drawer, in some box, and sometimes you use them and sometimes they just sit in the box. I said, twin. I see you, Radha Mahendra. So nice to see Radha Mahendra. So just like it says in Krishna book that Krishna's servants, the devotees who are in the mood of being Krishna's servants, like Akura and Uddhava, Krishna would sometimes go to them and say, okay, I have some service for you to do. Or Bali Maharaj, when Krishna went to Bali Maharaj's planet. And of course Krishna's always there in the form of Vamandev, but still, Krishna and Balaram went there in their original forms, and they said, oh, you are my servant. Okay, I have a service for you. Please give me back the 6 children of Devaki. So it's not that there's constantly order, sometimes there's silence. That's one of the signs of an honorable person, someone who's in a higher position. If I'm in a lower position from you, I cannot be silent when you ask me a question. I have to answer you if you're my superior. Okay? But if I'm the superior, I'm not required to answer. I can be silent if I want. So Nanda Maharaj, thinking, I'm the father, and as the Acharyas say, thinking, well, Krishna just doesn't understand. He's just a little boy. He's not going to understand. I mean, sometimes this happens to us also. Someone asks us a question, and we're thinking, there's no way that this person is going to be able to understand the answer. What do I do? What do I say? And we're silent and thinking about it. Do I give them any answer? How do I give them a simplified answer? Have you ever had that situation? Mm-hmm. Someone asks you a question and you're just thinking, I know this person and I know there's no way they're actually going to be able to either understand the answer or accept the answer. If I tell them the answer, either they'll just get more confused or they'll get angry or something. You know, what do I do? And you don't want to say to the person, you're not going to be able to understand. You know, that's kind of condescending to say to somebody, well, you're actually not pure enough or smart enough or surrendered enough. I was one time visiting one community where like well over 90% of the devotees were disciples of the same guru. And I was making the point that it's very rare that a spiritual authority will actually give the disciple the instruction that they'd like to give them. They usually have to give them some preliminary instruction. You can't usually say to somebody what's really necessary because they're not willing to hear it. And so the temple president was very offended. And he said, we're all willing to do whatever our spiritual master says. Whatever he says, we follow. And I said, but does he always say the highest thing? And actually what was really interesting is that a little while later I noticed that on the altar they were keeping his picture all the time. And I said, you know, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to take the picture off the altar after you finish making the offering. And they said, yes, our spiritual master also tells us this. And I said, so what do you do? And they say, well, we figure he's just being humble. So when he's here, we take it off, and then as soon as he leaves, we put it back on. And I said, no, it's a GPC resolution. And they said, why? I said, so ISKCON doesn't split into 100 factions. So we have a unified movement. I said, it's not just a question of humility. They thought, well, we thought we were serving our guru by having the picture there. I said, so you're serving your guru by disobeying him. They said, every time he comes, he tells us, take the picture off. And we're thinking, oh, we're so surrendered to our guru, we're going to disobey him. Right? So then when I brought up that example, then they said, oh, yeah, you know, you're right. You don't always listen. So generally, when we're giving someone instruction, we have to think very, very carefully. What is this person willing to listen to? And sometimes we experiment, and we try giving them the instruction that they really need to hear, and we see how they respond. And that's, of course, what Krishna's doing with us all the time in the heart. You know, he's giving us the instruction, and then he's seeing how we respond. And depending on how we respond, he adjusts accordingly. He'll say, well, really, you should do this. I don't know if I can do this. Okay, well, then do this. This happened with Narada and Dhruva also. Narada gave Dhruva an instruction, and Dhruva Maharaj, at least Dhruva was honest, and he just said, I'm really sorry, I can't do that. You know, I just can't do that. And so Narada said, okay, you can do this. I remember many years ago speaking to one lady who had just gone through a real crisis, and when I started telling her what the situation was, she couldn't hear it at all. She just became practically hysterical. And then I said, okay, you know, just keep chanting and everything will be okay. Just don't worry about it. Krishna will take care of you, you know, just keep chanting. So then I saw her just a few months ago. She's so happy. And she came up to me and she said, oh, Mila, I'm finally able to hear what you tried to tell me 3 years ago. She said, I'm sorry I couldn't hear it then. I said, just wasn't the right time. So Nanda Maharaj is being silent. He's thinking, you know, if I explain all these things to Krishna, is he really going to understand? He's just a little boy. This is, you know, complex Vedic principles. So, you know, these verses are one right after another in the Bhagavatam, but they're not actually happening one right after another. There's this pause taking place, according to the Acharyas. Okay, so then Krishna says, please tell me about it, Father. And he says, I have a great desire to know. Mahakamaha. Right? That's in today's verse. Mahakama. Kama means a desire. Maha great. I really want to know. I'm not just asking superficially. Well, sometimes we ask questions superficially too. You know, oh, what are you doing? And we don't really care. We say to somebody, oh, what have you been doing lately? And then while they tell us, we're thinking about something else. We're just asking to be polite. So Krishna's saying, I'm not asking to be polite. I really, really want to know. Sushrushtave, I will listen with faith. So if we want somebody to tell us the situation, we have to really want to know and be listening with faith. Now what he's doing is he's anticipating his father's arguments. So this is also a very important thing. And Krishna does this in the Bhagavad Gita as well. I'm sure we could find many places in the Shastra where Krishna and the great personalities anticipate the other arguments. And as Jayadeva Maharaj told me when he was critiquing one paper that I'd written, he said, you have to take the strongest arguments of the opposition and defeat those. Not that you just give your strongest arguments and you defeat the opposition's weakest arguments to make your case look better. Then you're not going to be prepared when the opposition comes up with their strongest arguments. So Krishna was, as Sarvatma, as the self of the self and the knower of everything, he knew that his father might be thinking, oh, he's just a little boy, he doesn't know anything, he won't understand. So anticipating that, now this is interesting, Krishna shows that he's wise. In other words, he's not defeating a particular point, not in this verse. But he's defeating the concept that he's not capable of understanding by showing how much knowledge and wisdom he has. So he starts speaking very, very high philosophy. He starts saying that sadhus don't see any difference between their possessions and other possessions, nor do they see any difference between friends, neutral parties, and enemies. Of course, this is explained in what chapter in the Bhagavad Gita?
Sixth chapter,
where Krishna says that the yogi doesn't see any difference between pebbles, stone, and gold, or between friends, enemies, and neutral parties. And we'll talk about this more tomorrow. Tomorrow we're going to focus on the idea of friends. But just briefly, this obviously doesn't mean, you know, I don't see any difference between my property and the property of others. Oh, that looks like a nice jacket. I think I'll take it. That's not what it means. It doesn't mean, you know, my property's your property's my property. You know, that's a nice iPhone you have there. Thank you very much. You know, that's not what it means. And it doesn't mean that the devotee is a fool. You know, it doesn't mean the devotee is a fool and goes around hugging the tigers. I mean, unless you're Mahaprabhu, then you can hug the tigers. generally speaking, the devotee is aware that this person is acting as my enemy and this person is acting as my friend. They're aware of the difference between stone and gold, right? If they're going to put gold leafing on the, just like we were just at a temple where they had gold leafing on the bathroom fixtures, on the pipe under the sink, in the bathroom, it's covered with gold. And the shower faucets are covered with gold, and the toilet room, even, they have one room just with a toilet and a sink, and in that room all of the fixtures are covered with gold. Now we won't say for whom that was done. Yes. But one knows the difference between gold and stone. One doesn't use a ordinary rock in the same way one would use gold. So what does it mean that one doesn't see the difference? It means that one doesn't see in terms of attachment and aversion, in terms of my own sense gratification. One doesn't think my friends are good and my enemies are bad. Who here has ever learned a really good lesson from an enemy? Ever learned a really, really good... Anybody? I've learned a lot of good things from my enemies. Sometimes I've learned what not to do. But I've learned a lot of good things from my enemies, or from neutral parties. I think I've learned as much from my enemies as I have from my friends, just maybe in different ways. Right? So sometimes one can get cured with some very sweet-tasting medicine, and sometimes one gets cured by surgery. And one doesn't see, oh, one is bad and one is good. So in that way, one doesn't distinguish. One doesn't say that the person who does the surgery is evil. Although they're cutting you up. What do you say? Okay, so Krishna's making the point here that he's acting as a friend, but anyway, Nandamar should have no friends or enemies. All right, now let's look at this as far as what we would do. So the first thing here is that Prabhupada says blind following is condemned. In 434, he says, absurd inquiries and blind following are condemned. So sometimes we think that in order to be a good devotee and in order to be surrendered, I have to follow blindly. However, following blindly is not one of the six symptoms of surrender. It's just not. And Prabhupada says it's condemned. He doesn't just say it's not a good idea or we would advise you don't do it. He says it's condemned. So if we think that something's wrong, we should ask. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevya prashna. One should ask. If there's something we don't understand or something we think is wrong, even if the person is our superior, we should ask, even if they're God. Arjuna asked Krishna, I don't get how you taught this yoga to the sun god. How is that possible? You're the same age as I am. He asked him. And he said, Krishna, I don't understand how you're telling me to keep abominable activities far distant, and then you're telling me to fight? And to fight Bhishma and Drona? That seems pretty abominable to me. How do those two things go together? I don't understand. Please explain. And those are a little challenging. Prabhupada translates it as, I'm bewildered by your equivocal instructions. Equivocal means you're saying two opposite things. Isn't it? Why are you telling me two opposite things? Why are you telling me something that's impossible? So one should ask, not just follow blindly. I mean, all right, it's nice sometimes in some situations to have a servant or a subordinate who just does what you tell them to do. But generally, we want people who are intelligent. We want people who are thoughtful. We can tell many, we don't have time, but we can tell many stories about Blind Fong. We can tell one. You all know the story of the cat? So there was, in India, the temples often don't have walls. They just have pillars and a roof because it's a very hot country. So there was one temple where there was just a stray cat. Practically anyone in India keeps cats as pets. Now getting dogs as pets is becoming fashionable in the big cities, but people don't usually have a cat as a pet. So the cats are just wandering around. So the cat wandered into the temple, and it started to walk up onto the altar. Just like here, it would be very easy to walk up onto the altar. And so when the bhoga, when the food is being offered, so they were offering some food to the deity, and the cat started to go to the altar, and the guru saw the cat and said, "Tie up the cat." So they tied up the cat, and after the offering and the archi was finished, they untied the cat, and they gave the cat some prasadam. So this went on every day. The cat figured, oh, this place I can get something to eat. So the cat would come, and they would tie up the cat, and then they would feed the cat. And then one day the guru passed away. The guru died, and the cat was still coming, and they were tying up the cat. And this went on for some more years, and then the cat died. And then the disciples said, we have to get a new cat because we have to tie up a cat during the offering. So this is blind following. So also Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, and you'll say here also in the Bhagavatam, that sacrifices get more result if being done in knowledge. So we should know what we're doing and why we're doing it. So if we have some question about our authorities, what they're doing, we should want to understand, because we're supposed to do our sacrifices, our duties, in knowledge. Now, often we're very, very sure that we're right, but since we're not Krishna, anybody Krishna? we can never be 100% sure that we're right. One of the most liberating places to be is to be in the place that, you know, I really don't know practically anything for certain. The only things I know for certain is that Krishna's God and I'm a soul and I'm his servant, and that's about it. And everything else, you know, what do I know? I have very limited knowledge. It's such a point of freedom to stop pretending we know for sure all sorts of things, that there's no way that we can know for sure because we can't see everything. It's just a relief. You know, I don't have to pretend to be God anymore because I'm not. So if I don't know everything, then it could be that my authority is right, even though I'm sure that they're wrong. It's possible. So it's very helpful to have a little script in the mind. I could be wrong, I could be wrong, I could be wrong, I could be wrong, I could be wrong. And there's very few things more embarrassing than being sure that you're right and finding out that you're wrong, especially if you make a really big stink about it. You write letters to the GBC body and the queen, and you put notices up in the temple, and, you know, you really... We used to go to one devotee restaurant, and they would sometimes serve mushrooms, and every time I'd see them serving mushrooms, I would make a big stink about it. And then when I was reading in Prabhupada's letters, books got published, where Prabhupada said that mushrooms are not generally offered, but they're not prohibited. There is no harm. And I read that letter, and I went, oh, and it was hard to go there, and I showed them the letter, and I said, I'm really sorry. So it's difficult, right? Especially if you're really public about it. So better to be a little humble in the beginning. And what I found it's very useful to say is, I'm confused. So it's very useful to think, I might be wrong, 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 I might be wrong. And why say that in your mind? Because then your words will come out with the proper tone of voice. Otherwise, it's like, well, I'm really confused. You know, but if you're thinking, I might be wrong, I might be wrong, I might be wrong, and you say, I'm confused. And then we notice that Krishna, he's taking the time to learn. He's not just condemning. mean, I had an experience just a few days ago where one GBC member wrote a question to a conference that I'm on, actually wrote two questions. So I answered one of the questions. And one of the members of the conference hadn't read the GBC member's questions clearly and thought I was answering the other question and got very angry with me and basically told me that I was a demon, in so many words. And it took quite a while for me to understand that this person thought that I was answering a different question, you know, to kind of sort that out. And then the person admitted, oh, I never really read the GBC statement very well. I just skimmed it. So I didn't even see their second question. So I didn't know you were answering that question. So take the time. Don't just immediately think, oh, they're wrong, they're nonsense, they're Maya, this is terrible, I'm going to go beat them up. Take some time. Krishna's taking the time. Right? And then Krishna's doing it with questions. With humbly asked questions. Now, I have found, actually, I was trained this way in different systems of teaching and counseling that's taught out in the material world, that one of the best ways to counsel people is to ask questions. Oh, what are you doing? Why the same kind of questions Krishna's asking? What are you doing this for? What do you hope to achieve? Are there other ways to do it? How do you know what the process is to do it? Who are you doing it for? Are you actually going to benefit? Not in a challenging way, not what are you doing this for? Not like that. But actually asking, what do you hope to achieve? And it's very effective. You know, people are much more convinced when they come to their own conclusions. Isn't it? You know, if I say, what are you doing this for? What's your goal? What do you want? I was just talking with someone recently who said she wasn't very happy in her life. And I said, what do you want? I said, this is a question I ask a lot. I said, if you could do anything you wanted, if there was no restrictions of money or talent or energy, what would you do? She said, I'd go back to live in a temple. I said, are you sure? I said, what's stopping you from doing that right now? She said, nothing. I said, then do you really want to live in a temple? Because if you really wanted to live in a temple, you'd probably already be doing it. There's a temple just an hour away from you. And they have plenty of room, and they have plenty of need for help. I said, what do you really want to do? So asking those kind of questions instead of saying to somebody, this is what you should do, this is what you should do. And gradually, it was very interesting, she was able to figure out that what she wanted to do was exactly what she was already doing. And that the problem was something different. The problem wasn't that she was doing the wrong thing. Actually, the problem was she thought it was a big problem and it was very small. Which is also often, we often find that people think that I have a huge problem, and therefore I have to have a huge solution. Whereas often, no matter how big the problems are, often the solutions are very small. Sometimes we think that because I have a hole in the ground, you know, 25 feet deep, I have to have that much soil to put in the hole, but it doesn't work that way. It's often very, very, very small adjustments. So anyway, you ask questions. And particularly these questions of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, these are also questions to ask ourselves. If we're confused in our life, who am I doing this for? What is my relationship? Why do I like the relationship I have? Do I want a different relationship? Who's really benefiting from this? What do I want to achieve? And am I doing this in the best way to achieve what I want to achieve? Are there other ways of doing it? Do I have the right relationship? Do I have the right goal? Do I have the right process? And Krishna's showing a lot of respect. So frankly, we should show respect to everybody. Amani namani dina. Even our subordinates. We should show respect even to bugs. You know, sometimes we're really good at showing respect to bugs, but not really good at showing respect to the other humans. You notice that? Sometimes we treat the little bugs better than we treat the devotees. You know, we're nicer to the cows than we are to the other brahmacharis. So we should always show respect. What to speak of if someone is in a superior position to us. And then anticipate their arguments, anticipate their concerns. Try to really see things from their perspective. You know, I'm just recently was working with one devotee, and the devotee didn't like how we were doing things. And so at first I spent about 2 weeks trying to convince this devotee in various ways that he should just surrender to how the rest of us wanted to do it. And finally I decided that it might be a good idea to hear his point of view. And, you know, when I wasn't hearing his point of view, my mood was that he was foolish, stubborn, ungrateful, difficult, proud, and all sorts of things. I had all kinds of labels, you know, because he wouldn't listen to me and agree with me and how I wanted to do it. And I would get very frustrated and think, do I even want to help this person anymore? They're so this and they're so that. And then one day I said, you know, maybe I should really take time to understand this person's point of view and this person's perspective. And when I did that, everything shifted. And then I was able to see, oh, okay, these are your real concerns and these actually need to be addressed. It's not that just surrender, just take it. So Krishna is trying to understand his father's point of view. I mean, Krishna's God. He can just come and order, you know. But he's not. That's not how he's dealing. He's trying to understand his father's point of view. He's anticipating his arguments. He's being very respectful. He's really listening. He's not just asking his father questions superficially. But he really wants to hear what his father has to say. And he's asking questions to draw out the answer. Right? And he wants to come to real knowledge. So, thank you very much. Do we have time for questions, or are we out of time?
We've got time for a few.
Okay. Anyone? Questions, comments, additions, subtractions? Corrections?
Yes. Many times.
Hello.
Oh.
Hi, my name is Sophia.
Hello, Sophia.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Very nice speech. Very inspiring.
Oh, Krishna's kind.
Many times I feel a little intolerant towards other people. Just like you said, I should remind myself that I might be wrong. But for example, when I see my friends or my family eating a lot of meat, that's really hard, right? And it's really hard to think also that I might be wrong, that many other people should eat meat. How do you deal with that?
Okay, very good question. So what do you do if you absolutely know you're right? So here even Krishna absolutely knew he was right, and he still took a humble position, and he still tried to understand the thinking of the other person. And he still went about it by asking questions. So there are times when we absolutely know that we're right. And be careful. Those times are small. They're a lot smaller than we think. At least in my personal experience. Maybe most of you are absolutely right a lot more than I am. But my own experience is that I'm absolutely right only a very small amount of the time. But even if we're absolutely right, you know, people don't usually respond to being hit over the head with a hammer. And also, one of the interesting things about dealing with another living being is that living beings have free will. It's sort of this funny, inconvenient thing that we really like in ourselves and we really find irritating in others. But really, there wouldn't be any pleasure to having a relationship with people who had no free will. That's like having a relationship with this microphone. I mean, how much relationship can I have with the microphone? I can turn it on, I can turn it off, I can put it here, I can put it there. I mean, I really can't have, I can get some satisfaction out of the thing. Some. You know, I've got this judder and it's soft and it's warm and it folds up into a really tiny, tiny little packet and it's very light.
so it works well with my traveling style. So I have some appreciation of it, but I can't say I have a relationship with it. And why don't I have a relationship with it? Because it has no will. It can't say, I don't want you to bring me today. Sorry. Or I don't want to be put on that way. I want to be put on another way. You know, it just does what I say. So relationship means there's something voluntary, and voluntary means the other party can say no. How interesting. And we say Krishna doesn't enjoy the material energy. That means Krishna doesn't relish anything that's dead. Isn't there any relishment? In his world, everything is alive. The buildings are alive. You know, everything is conscious. That means everything can say no. Now that's a big risk. And it's a real risk because there's a whole lot of us who said no, and here we are. There's a lot of us who said, no, I'm not going to serve you. I'm not going to deal with you as the Supreme. I want to be the Supreme. And I'm sure Krishna said, well, I don't think you're going to like that because that's not the way things are. And if you're going to be the Supreme, who's going to be your subordinates? How is that going to work? And I really don't think it's a good idea. No, I insist. Okay. We'll put you in illusion because you can't do that in reality. And there's a lot of us. I mean, gosh, you know, there's unlimited universes and there's so many planets and there's so many jivas. If you think about how many jivas that are in the conditioned life, there's a lot of us, more than we can fathom. I can't even fathom 6 billion or almost 7 billion now people. What to speak of all the frogs and the palm trees and the, you know, blades of grass. And but we all said no. And Krishna's willing to have all, he doesn't like it, by the way. Krishna doesn't like that we're suffering. It's painful for him in one sense that we're suffering. So he doesn't like that. No parent or friend likes to see someone they care about suffering. So he doesn't like that. But he's willing to tolerate that because he really values our ability to say yes voluntarily, which means we have the ability to say no. So we have to remember that also. If I'm dealing with somebody, no matter what their relationship is with me, if I know, if I'm absolutely sure that I'm absolutely right, and the person still says no, that unless they're a very young child and we're talking about something dangerous, then I have to respect them. Or unless they're a criminal and I'm the government, you know, something like that. That's part of a respectful dealing with another living entity. You have the right to say no, and you have the right to even do something that damages yourself. I never have the right to force you to do the right thing. So the government has the duty to incarcerate criminals and even execute criminals, although you don't do that over here. And the parent has the duty to take the sharp knife away from the child and take the child out of the street and things like that. We never, ever have the right or the ability to try to override somebody's free will. So in that way, we're always respectful. We can present things, but ultimately the other person has to make their own choice, even if it's a choice that's going to damage them, and even if we love them, and even if we don't want to see them damaged, and even if it's breaking our heart that they're damaged, we still respect their free will. That's how Krishna deals with us. And we wouldn't want him to deal with us any other way. No, we really wouldn't want Krishna to force us. I mean, sometimes Krishna says, Prabhupada says, you can ask Krishna to force you. But what I understand Prabhupada means by that is put you in a situation where it's very clear, where things are very clear, that you really need to surrender to Krishna. But even then, there's always a choice because the demons get put in that situation and they still don't surrender. You know, Ravana and Hiranyakashipu, they were in a situation where, practically speaking, they were forced to surrender, but they still didn't do it. So you can always refuse. I hope that's helpful. It's a very, very hard thing to really accept when we're conditioned souls, that I cannot control another conditioned soul.
even if I know what's right, and even if I love them, and even if I, what I want to do for them is loving and caring. And by the way, a lot of our anger and frustration at other people is due to trying to control them. A lot. Anything else? We can take one more and then we should end. Yes.
Thank you very much for a nice class. I was in a situation once where I was at someone's house, and it was a married couple with children, and I was having a meal with them, and they had both been devotees,
mm-hmm.
but specifically the mother, she was a little bit, her understanding, she had a not such a nice experience in Iskcon. And she was kind of moving away from Krishna consciousness in general.
Okay.
And she had a little bit of a kind of chip on her shoulder, like sarcastic mood towards Krishna consciousness in general. So they were offering me some food, and it wasn't offered, but I was thinking anyway, don't want to create too much of a scene. And I was just saying, oh, has it got any, garlic? And the husband was like, oh, I don't think this one has. And then the kids, they said, why don't you eat garlic, onions, and mushrooms? And I didn't know what to say, and I couldn't think of an answer. And then the wife, she kind of made a kind of a dig, sarcastic comment, don't disturb his blind following, something like that, And I regretted that I didn't have an intelligent answer to give, either to the kids or to the mother, So I wondered, in that kind of situation, what answer would you have given to that question?
Oh my. That just reminds me, when I was in a very similar situation, didn't know what to say either. So I don't know. I was in a situation when I was, as part of getting my degree, I was doing an internship in a government school. And I had to really be undercover about being a devotee. In that school in America, there's a separation of church and state, and I was in a very heavily Christian area. And if they had known that I was a devotee, they would have found some excuse and fired me, and then I wouldn't have gotten my degree. I mean, it really wouldn't have been very good. So I would go to the classes every day, I'd visit each class every day for a few minutes. And in one class, they were eating snacks, and the teacher was asking the children, what restaurant do you like? And I had a thought, I had a desire. My thought was, I wonder what it would feel like to be a devotee child in this classroom. And sometimes you think things and then you forget that you thought them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I promptly forgot that I thought that. So I'm sitting there and, he's asking, and then all of a sudden I'm thinking, I hope she doesn't ask me, I hope she doesn't ask me, I hope she doesn't ask me. And then she asked me, so, what's your favorite restaurant? And there are no devotee restaurants in that area. So I said, I really don't go to restaurants. And the kids said, oh, you're weird. What's wrong with you? And I kind of started sinking into the sea, And the teacher says, oh, why not? Oh, my God. Everyone knew I was a vegetarian, but you could eat vegetarian food in some restaurants. And I said, my father used to run a food business, and I noticed the consciousness of the people in the factory, And I said, and I used to work in a restaurant, I used to be a chef in a restaurant, and I know the consciousness of the people in those places. And I really like to eat food where the people who cook it are cooking it with love. I thought they might get that, And they went, how weird, And all the kids were just going, she's weird, what's wrong with her, Oh, it was terrible. And I was just, I felt like I was sort of melting and folding. And then I got out of the room as quickly as I could, and for about 10 minutes I felt this shame, this like deep shame and embarrassment. And I thought, what's wrong with me? Why am I so affected by what some kids think of being some school? Then Super Soul said you wanted to know what it would feel like to be a devotee child in one of these schools, so that's what it would feel like. So I don't know. I didn't have a very good response. My response didn't work very well.
Mm-hmm.
But at least you got an experience of how hard it is to try to be a devotee when people are making fun of you. Maybe Krishna was giving you an experience of how hard it would be for the father to train his children as devotees, and that, and that's, you know, empathy is not a bad thing. One of my friends told me how that she's a very, very intelligent, knowledgeable, and competent person, and she told me how for many, many years, whenever devotees couldn't do anything, she'd say, well, why can't you do that? That's easy. Why can't you memorize 3 verses a day? It's easy. It's so simple. Anybody can do it. Why can't you do anything, you know? Why can't you chant 64 rounds a day? So these are actual things, you know? It's easy. Anybody can do it. It's so simple. Why can't you clean this properly? So that was her mantra. It's so simple. It's so simple. What's your problem? And then one day she got a stroke, and for 6 months she couldn't pick her head up. And she realized, you know, maybe it isn't so simple for everybody. So sometimes these situations we're put in, it's not so we can have the right answer, or we can do this, or we can do that. So we can get some empathy of what different people have to go through. Mm-hmm. And especially those of us who are doing preaching and doing counseling, it's really nice. It's one of the ways that Krishna trains us, is putting us in different situations so that we have the capacity to actually relate to people. Because otherwise, if you haven't been in that situation, then if someone asks you, and that's a very common situation, that in a family, one family member is mocking Krishna consciousness. It's not unusual at all. And you might say, well, just preach to them. And you found it wasn't so easy to just preach to them. Well, just keep your principles and your standards anyway. And you found it wasn't so easy. It wasn't so easy to say, well, is it offered? Well, what's in it? Well, we'd like to be able to tell people, oh, it's easy. If you just want to do it, you can do it. Yeah. Krishna puts us in those places to see, oh, it's not so easy. Yeah. It's not so easy. I remember one sannyasi in a class saying, it's easy to only eat food cooked by devotees. And I went up to him afterwards, I said, yeah, for you. I said, not for a family where both the husband and wife are working. When are they going to have time to cook? And there's no restaurant, and there's no, you know. I said, not, oh, it's not so easy. And he couldn't get it at all. So, yeah. I hope that's helpful. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.
Grace for the